Hello, everyone. Welcome to Cracking Addiction. My name is Dr. Fergal Armstrong, and today we have with us Dr. Manu Bhatnagar. Manu, I thought today we'd talk about the treatment principles that underpin management of ADHD. What's your thoughts on the management of ADHD?
I think it's important for those who think they might have ADHD to be aware that it's more than just stimulant medication. And I think it's important for a lot of health professionals to know that stimulant medication is actually quite effective. And I think both those facts can coexist and be very missed as well.
Yeah. I mean, there was a trial done that demonstrated that for the simple cases, the use of stimulants at appropriate doses, and that might be a key issue, the use of stimulants at appropriate doses can induce a remission rate of up to maybe 70 to 80%. But that still means that there are at least 20% of patients, even with optimal stimulant prescribing, don't get better. So I think it opens the door to the idea that the treatment of this condition, which affects multiple domains, also requires multiple domains of intervention.
Absolutely. And having those early indicators of ADHD are really important, because having that support as a child can not only give you schools and the extended family as a mechanism of support, but it can really save you from having to be isolated as an adult when you get found out to have ADHD.
So, I mean, you know, we've mentioned stimulants, and everyone knows that ADHD is treated with stimulants. So I suppose really we need to think about, well, what is a stimulant? So Manu, what is a stimulant?
Well, I mean, I am an addiction psychiatrist, Fergal, and, you know, I see people who have ADHD, but I'm sure you've seen a lot more people who use stimulants. So maybe I'll turn it back onto you. What does a stimulant do, and how would you give a description? Because what I prescribe just happens to be made in a lab and given to certain people. But there's a lot more stimulants out there that a lot more people are using.
I suppose you could say that a stimulant is any drug that either directly or indirectly increases dopamine in the nucleus accumbens. But I'm just thinking about this because that's also the mechanism of action of a lot of most substances of dependence as well. So really, I think we need to think about a stimulant as someone as something that can actually increase dopamine release superphysiologically. And there are, you know, life is full of stimulants. I mean, you know, when we think about the maximal physiological threshold, we know that certain substances will increase dopamine beyond superphysiological. So for instance, you might get, like, smoking increases dopamine. Playing video games increases dopamine, you know, but stimulants per se, like methamphetamine and cocaine, they can increase the amount of dopamine released in the nucleus accumbens by a factor of 1,000 times that which is the maximal normal amount. And really, so if we look at cocaine as the kind of the archetypal stimulant, cocaine is what I call a triple reuptake inhibitor. So cocaine inhibits the reuptake of serotonin, noradrenaline, and dopamine. And so it has the ability to elevate the concentrations of all of those neurotransmitters in all of the synapses in the brain. And the increase in the dopamine is associated with its euphorogenic effect and its stimulating effect. Also, there's a little bit of noradrenaline that also increases the activating effect there. When we think about medicinally prescribed stimulants, we think about amphetamines. And in particular, we need to understand the difference between illicit amphetamines and prescribed amphetamines. And we also need to understand the kind of subtle biochemical changes that are present in amphetamines that allow us to use words like dexamphetamine. So, Manu, what's an amphetamine, and what's the difference between dexamphetamine and amphetamine?
Well, one is a treatment and the other one's a drug. So that's where you start off. That was a fantastic sort of segue into the mechanism of action for ADHD treatment as opposed to stimulants in general. And I think dexamphetamine was the earliest and probably purest and closest to amphetamines, but the mechanism of action has targeted getting away from that euphoria and maintaining some sort of steady state, because you think you're going to take this medication repeatedly over a long period of time, so that the harmony of dopaminergic flow in particular parts of the brain can maintain a sense of focus rather than having a sense of euphoria and then the subsequent withdrawal from that euphoria. So the dex in dexamphetamine or dextroamphetamine, other preparations of dexamphetamine in other countries like Adderall in America, firstly, the way in which the tablet is formulated is to have much more of a bell curve than a sharp up and down. And also in the ways in which it's metabolized in the liver, it's more of a widespread in the brain as opposed to targeting that dumping of dopamine, as you mentioned, in a particular part of the brain that's all about reward and euphoria.
Yeah. So really, medicinally prescribed stimulants, they're derived from the same parent molecule, but dextroamphetamine is the kind of the dextro isomer of racemic mixture amphetamine. And because of its the way it's, the body's handling, what I'm hearing from you is that it doesn't cause the same rapid acute rise in plasma concentrations that is associated with illicit amphetamine use, and therefore the effect is much more rounded and smooth.
That's right. And keeping that in mind, dexamphetamine is probably the most short-acting and the one that maybe does cause euphoria. So starting from that point, we've actually gotten a lot better as evening out that dopaminergic flow.
So if we're still focusing on stimulants, and remember amphetamines, bearing in mind that they have the capacity, like cocaine, to act as what I call triple agonists, if we're still following concept, there are other stimulants apart from dexamphetamine. There's Vyvanse. What's Vyvanse?
Vyvanse is lisdexamphetamine. It's relatively new and it's all the rage. So there's actually a global shortage of Vyvanse at the moment because it's becoming the go-to ADHD medication that people are starting on. And it's essentially another iteration beyond dexamphetamine where it's, I believe, prodrug of dexamphetamine, and that means it is turned into the amphetamine molecule much later down the cascade. And so rather than having to metabolize and suffer the consequences of a peak and a trough of dexamphetamine, a larger proportion of the amphetamine itself enters the brain. So you can maintain that acting ride. Yeah. This dexamphetamine is one of the longest acting ADHD treatments, once a day. It's better.
So the Liz molecule is actually lysine, isn't it? The amino acid lysine.
Yeah.
And it's that lysine allows it to be absorbed in the gut. And then, of course, it's cleaved. And so the lysine moiety is taken away from the dexamphetamine moiety by enzymes that are present on red blood cells. So it doesn't actually become an active molecule until it's actually absorbed into the systemic circulation. And the theory, I suppose, is that it cannot be misused, because even if someone tried to use illicit Vyvanse in the quest for a rapid rush, the effect of Vyvanse is dependent on effectively the function of enzymes in one's blood cells. And they're not going to rush their job for any reason, let alone the quest for a high.
That's right, which is why lisdexamphetamine's now being trialed for methamphetamine use disorder, just to see if we can come up with some sort of like-for-like agonist therapy for what is otherwise a very difficult substance use disorder to manage.
Yeah. I'm not aware of the results coming out from the Lima study.
They're very high doses. So at about 250 milligrams of lisdexamphetamine, I think some people are finding functional gains with, as you would. But in terms of effectively treating a substance use disorder and no longer meeting criteria by not engaging in illicit methamphetamine use, the results are a bit equivocal. But you know, there are massive logistical the restrictions to actually being able to do studies like this. So the fact that we're game enough to try it and we're getting some data is a great step forward.
Yeah, so we're beginning to investigate this field.
Mm.
I mean, I suppose one of the benefits of the Lima trial is it actually proved the safety of high-dose lisdexamfetamine.
Yeah,
because as you say, you can go up to those 200-plus milligram doses without apparent side effects. Well, I suppose there's two issues that people worry about using stimulants to treat any condition, possibly ADHD. One is psychosis, and the other one is relapse to substance use disorder. What would you say to that?
I think the evidence about precipitating psychosis is probably very, very overhyped generally. I think especially with the long-acting formulations and especially with methylphenidate, I think it's quite rare to see someone who has a de novo psychosis purely because of stimulant medications. There is obviously a consideration if someone's had psychotic experiences in the past, they have a high genetic loading for psychosis or bipolar, you'd be careful to monitor for symptoms and maybe pick preparations that are less purely amphetamine. So lisdexamfetamine would be preferential to dexamfetamine, methylphenidate even more preferential. And then there are other non-stimulant medications, which we might talk about later. If someone's psychotic, that could still be beneficial. So I think it's probably something very much to keep aware of, but the purpose of doing an hour-long assessment is also to exclude risk factors for that. So we're pretty good at avoiding it, but every now and then if you have that propensity to have a psychotic episode, it might be the thing that adds another notch to your likelihood meter. Substance use disorder, this gateway drug slippery slope kind of thing, I think it's pretty unlikely that would be the case. In my experience, when I've found people using stimulants off the street because they were prescribed stimulants before, you'd be interesting to see what those stimulants they were prescribed were doing, where they were having those euphoric experiences, where they were abusing them and diverting them. And the substance use disorder was there prior to that ADHD diagnosis might tell you whether that trajectory happens. It's pretty unlikely, and I think it's quite safe for someone to commence stimulants for treatment and not have to worry about whether they're addicted to that.
Yeah, I would agree with you. You usually don't expect a substance use disorder to emerge as a result of appropriate stimulant therapy. And I suppose that speaks to the fact that these studies were done in kids treated with stimulants, and then they followed them up and analyzed the incidence of substance use disorder, and there was no signal emerging from those studies of any specific risk. Nonetheless, one still needs to keep it in mind when when one is assessing and managing a patient.
That's right. And there's a physiological aspect of what you just mentioned, but there's also, you have to weigh that up with the risk of not treating someone with ADHD. And
exactly.
The likelihood of them developing a substance use disorder with untreated ADHD is probably a lot higher.
Yeah. So to a certain extent, if you're going to start working in this treatment space, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. that can be a problem.
Quote the guidelines. So,
we do have a guideline, thankfully, but guidelines are still guidelines.
Right.
We'll talk about guidelines presumably in a future episode. But I just want to pick you up on one of the things you said. You've introduced the subject or the topic of methylphenidate. So I think really we've agreed that when we're talking about stimulants, we've got these molecules that are based on amphetamine. So we've got dexamphetamine and lisdexamphetamine. The next level down in my mind of thinking is methylphenidate, which is also a stimulant. But it doesn't really, it's not what I would call a triple reuptake inhibitor. It reuptakes it inhibits the reuptake of dopamine and noradrenaline, but not serotonin. So therefore, it can still be regarded as a stimulant because it does actually increase the concentration, the synaptic concentration of dopamine and noradrenaline. So what's your views on the use of methylphenidate versus the use of amphetamine or dexamphetamine?
Preferentially, especially vulnerable people and your kids are started on methylphenidate. So another name for methylphenidate is Ritalin. And prior to lisdexamfetamine or Vyvanse, Ritalin is by far the most prescribed stimulant in the world. And that's because it did come in a very long acting preparation. So you can get Concerta, which is long acting methylphenidate, and also Ritalin LA. And once a day dosing is very preferential, not just for functioning, but also for maintenance of dopaminergic and noradrenergic flow to prevent kind of withdrawal symptoms. So dexamphetamines, Adderall, they don't come in long-acting preparation, so you'd have to take it at 8 a.m. and then again midday, and they're very easy to be abused because of that effect. So, you know, it's preferential from a treatment point of view. Most people will say they get a better effect, and also from a safety point of view, because you don't get those peaks and troughs. There's good evidence as well that, you know, all these hypothetical risks of deteriorating mental state, because keeping in mind, as we spoke about earlier, those who have ADHD don't only have ADHD most of the time. Anxiety, depression, and then, you know, as a brain is growing, the emergence of psychoses or bipolar, if they do happen, methylphenidate's a very safe drug for that to for that to be in the mix. So I'm pretty confident prescribing methylphenidate for most people, but I think these dexamphetamines just kind of taking it that next step further. Either one's fine, and if one's not working, it's completely suitable to switch to the other.
Yeah. And then below that, we have the noradrenergic drugs. So these were the you know, otherwise known as the antidepressants. So, I mean, there are two drugs that, a number of them, but the main drug is atomoxetine, which is predominantly a noradrenergic, noradrenaline reuptake inhibitor. So just to recap on this kind of inverted pyramid, so we've got at the very top, we've got cocaine and amphetamines, which are triple reuptake inhibitors. Then we've got methylphenidate, which is a dual reuptake inhibitor. And then now we've got atomoxetine, which is a single agent reuptake inhibitor, inhibits the reuptake of noradrenaline. So it increases the concentration in the synapse of noradrenaline, which has an activating effect. It started life out, I believe, as an antidepressant, similar, and I liken it to the antidepressant reboxetine.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on atomoxetine?
From a biochemical point of view, it's you're quite right. It's very similar to reboxetine in that it's a noradrenaline reuptake inhibitor. Reboxetine's a NARI. It's very similar in that, but there's a reason it's no longer used for depression. It's because it wasn't very effective whatsoever. This monoamine theory, this mystery of depression and anxiety, is still haunting us because the more receptors you seem to hit probably is a better effect. And I think just focusing on one, be it noradrenaline, doesn't seem to have a lot of effects either as an antidepressant. And in my clinical experience as a ADHD treatment either, it's often reserved for last resort if someone can't have stimulant medication because of some or risk profile, or first line for someone who has, you know, really concerning genetic risks or historical risks of ill effects. So it's one of those things where if it's required, it means that either other things were considered or tried, but they're probably not either going to be effective or safe.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of it's the kind of the go-to safe one if you really are worried about addiction or psychosis, isn't it?
Yeah. And look, some people can find that there are some elements in which their functioning has improved with noradrenaline, maybe in terms of being able to focus a little bit, not in terms of intensity, but in terms of breadth throughout the day. It is a bit activating, so that can be sort of seen as beneficial for someone who isn't able to sort of maintain concentration. But actually ticking off those criteria for ADHD, especially the motor symptoms, it doesn't really cut the mustard for a lot of people.
Sure. All right, Manu, we've run out of time for this episode. I look forward to chatting with you again very shortly on the non-stimulant pharmacology of ADHD management.
Thanks, Fergal. I'll see you next time.
That's all for today, folks. My name is Dr. Fergal Armstrong, and this has been Cracking Addiction.